The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Lord knows they'll try.
Welcome back. This is Lori. We're here with Gary Hunt. Tom was called away for just a few minutes. Gary, how are you doing this evening?
Just fine.
And you were talking a little bit about the committees of safety and the things you'd found out about that. Do you want to say a little bit more about the committees of safety and what interested you about them?
Well, my research since 1993 keeps enlightening me more and more, and I acquired some books, the Albany, New York Committee of Safety from 1774 to 1782, and you get a good picture that they became the de facto government of the people, regardless of the king's governments that were established in Albany. And as I mentioned, the Minutemen by John R. Galvin talks about how the committees of safety were involved and gave the authority for the militia to converge on Lexington and Concord and chase the British back to Boston. And where I was going with this is Ryan Payne spent 10 days here in my office with me preparing a PowerPoint presentation that was taken up to Oregon, and the it was given to the Harney County Fairgrounds, and they formed a committee of safety up there. Now, they ended up with some, let's say, bad people in the committee of safety. But they began to realize, and they're still there, they began to realize that they became a government aside from the government that existed in Harney County. And so the article that I wrote, the Plan for Restoration of Constitutional Government, which Ryan had read and led to us preparing the Committee of Safety PowerPoint presentation, is based upon the concept that was used back then, where a town or a village or a plantation would have committees of safety when the government wasn't doing its proper job. And so the plan looks at that whole concept of establishing committees of safety, and by one means or another, pushing the royal government aside and becoming the representative of the people in that community. And once it does that, even if the other government still exists, if the people recognize the Committee of Safety, the Committee of Safety was responsible for making sure that the militia was armed and gave them the authority to act. So in the book, for example, that one of the militia sent a representative to try and find the Committee of Safety members who were dispersed in the county, and it took them 6 hours before they could get the approval to, I think it was Connecticut, get the approval to go down to Massachusetts. And they arrived with a large contingent, 80 members, just after the British passed one of the towns on the way back to Boston. So the history of the Committee of Safety becomes quite interesting, because we probably would have never become the United States of America had it not been for the colonial era committees of safety.
And that's one of the things that I think was a big player in the Malheur incident, was the Committee of Safety and the actions that they were starting to take. Do you have any update on how they're acting and how they're, if they're effective at the moment?
No, they're right now they're pretty dormant. As I said, there were a couple people on there. I had a few conference calls with them. And there were some people that were resistant to exercise the authority. And until they get that cleaned out, it would be like having a Tory on a Committee of Safety 240 years ago. And they've basically got that. But there's not much that they're doing up there right now.
Okay.
Whether they're going to become active or not, I don't know. But there is a webpage, committee.org, C-O-M-M-I-T-T-E-E.org. That I've had up for years, but is kind of dormant, too. It has a lot of historical information about committees of safety. But my focus is on writing articles. It's not on pushing committees of safety. However, I do, when I have an opportunity, such as this present conversation, in explaining committees of safety and the significance, significant role they played in the creation of this country, that I take every opportunity to do that.
And it was a big player in all that we've been going through lately with the Bundys, too. I did attend some of the court hearings up in Oregon and did meet some of the committees of the Committee of Safety. And they took it quite seriously that they had not done their duty and kept their government at bay and held their feet to the fire, and they had stood up to go to those committees for that reason, to try to correct some of the wrongs that the government was overstepping their duties. Excuse me.
Well, if we look at what happened in Harney County, it was rather difficult when you have hundreds of FBI agents and all their equipment at the airport and them being new at it, for them to take a role. Now, they're right. As far as I know, they're still there, but there's nothing to be active about now. There might be, because Shauna Cox is filing an action up there in Harney County. I don't want to speak to what the purpose is, but there was an error in the first filing, and she's refiling it now. And until that's refiled properly, I can't really say what it is. But that might be something that the Committee of Safety, Harney County Committee of Safety, might become more vocal on. They do still exist. I think they still have their webpage up, and I haven't spoken to the members in 4 or 5 months. But it's going to be interesting to see if they begin taking a position. Now, the difficulty in Harney County is over half the adults in Harney County have themselves or family members that work for the federal government. So, you know, they're facing the same situation that a lot of the colonial governments had. If the other people that aren't obliged to the federal government for their primary source of income, they could divide Harney County quite easily in who the real authority is. We know that Grasty and Ward, it's just come out that Ward had relinquished his authority to the federal government at their request. So did Grasty.
That's insane.
It is insane. But they relinquished their authority. I've got to talk to Pete Santilli. He's supposed to get the documents. They're being mailed to him, and he'll provide me a copy when he gets them. But a lady had filed an FOIA, a lady from Missouri, and she was on his program this morning, or was it yesterday morning, and explained that they had relinquished, and through FOIA she's got copies of the document, which is going to be an interesting story in itself. But then one thing the government does now that's rather interesting is, I call it green mail. Blackmail is where you want money to keep your secrets. Green mail is when the government says, we'll stop giving you money if you don't do what we tell you to do. And every state in the union gets billions of dollars a year. School, education, law enforcement. I wrote an article a while back, back in the 90s, Crime Control Act of 1994, where it was, if you recall, Cops on the Street is what it was called. And what they would do is they would pay the full salary for the first year, the three-quarters of the salary, second year, half the salary, third year, quarter salary, fourth year. But don't worry, because we'll teach you how to use civil asset forfeiture to offset the cost of maintaining the money you need to pay these new officers that you put on the street after we stop paying you the money. And it was very clear that the government then buys favors, because they had to get the money, they had to basically give allegiance to the DOJ. So, and the school system, for example, they get the funds from the federal government. It used to be the ad valorem taxes paid for the school system, and the ad valorem taxes were established by the local school board, but now the federal government's taken over the educational process, and the curriculum is defined by the federal government, and they define what can be a textbook and what can't be. And so Islam has to be taught in schools, Common Core, all these things are federal mandates that used to be local decisions. And so that's what I call green mail, because you don't get the money. Now, interestingly, when Trump was going to withhold the money, I think it was from San Francisco for being a sanctuary city, a district court judge, this is absurd, a district court judge can override the president of the United States. And we've seen that with the Trump administration, whether it be the immigration policy or the money to sanctuary cities, that he can't withhold it. But it became very apparent when he wanted to withhold the money for San Francisco, because they were going to be a sanctuary, they wanted to be a sanctuary city, but he isn't allowed to do that because some peon judge has more power than him. But it became very apparent that this is, San Francisco needs that money. Without that money, they'd probably go bankrupt. So this is where the government has taken our tax dollars. And there's, you know, if you look at historically, the government takes about 85% of the money that they get to administer the other 15%. How much of our tax dollars go to the federal government and 15% comes back to us? But that 15% amounts to trillions of dollars a year throughout the whole country. And what they've done then is, by the obedience of the government, which is what happened in Western Massachusetts, everything belongs to the federal government. They're bound by the federal government. We saw this in Oregon with Marcus Mumford, when they said, we're bringing a court action to keep you from ever practicing in the Oregon district again. Well, finally, he realized that he was going to lose and it would be better for him just to relinquish it, and he did. So he can't practice in the federal courts in Oregon anymore because they have so much power that the states don't matter. With Massey, you know, the state said you can own a firearm. He was never on federal land and all the work that he did. But the Texas statutes don't mean anything. The Idaho Supreme Court saying that we can't even enforce our own constitution doesn't mean anything. The federal government has taken absolute control, just like the British did in Massachusetts in the 1760s and 70s.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's not a good point. That's a bad point.
Well, no, you make a good point is what I mean. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, and the rat race goes on with these judges that think that they can do whatever they want. They can accept what they think is cool, and they can reject what they disagree with. It's California's a mess, right? But it's all over the place.
The whole country's a mess. It just shows in California because their arrogance to federal law, you know, that they will hide. They'll do whatever they can. Well, they want to charge employers if they cooperate with ICE. They want to charge them $10,000 or maybe put them in jail. Not really clear, because I've seen two different sides of that, maybe both. But, you know, California is a belligerent state. They've declared the entire state a sanctuary state. So
that's there's an invasion. We have a fellow that comes on. He's an activist and out there in the LA area, and he has brought us some footage from some of these meetings, and it's like, I don't even understand what planet these people live on. They've allowed La Raza to pretty much take over sections and take over a whole park, take over sections of the city. And people are coming to these city council meetings and screaming their heads off, you know, that, you know, when the South did this, look what happened. Now you're letting somebody else do it and it's okay. Yeah, makes no sense.
Well, I was born and raised in California, Rolling Hills. I was born in Long Beach and raised in Rolling Hills. And back then, California was a conservative state, a very friendly state. In fact, we had some of the best roads in the country back then. Even when I got out of the Army in 67, we had some good roads. But now the roads in California aren't good because that money goes to pay people that aren't willing to work for a living. That's where all the money goes here, and that's why they need the federal funds. They'd go bankrupt and people would starve because they're not willing to work.
Well, you know, I kind of have a – you've heard of the Cloward-Piven strategy.
Yeah.
And the Saul Alinsky tactics of this mass immigration is to do just that, is to overwhelm the federal government, to overwhelm and to essentially create an economic revolution where the – workers of the world didn't unite, so that now they're engaging in economic and legal warfare. You know, rules for radicals.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's a guy in the White House right now that I think is possibly going to turn that around. You know, he's gotten
so far
22 regulations abandoned sufficiently to affect industry, millions of dollars, and then with the tax break, there's millions more saved on that. At this point, he's saved private industry over $256 million. And so, you know, he's going in the right direction, and he's got the obstruction of even some of the conservatives in Congress
so-called
voting against him.
So-called
conservative, yeah.
the rhinoplasties. You know,
well, they were probably Democrats, but they were in Republican districts, so they called themselves Republicans to get elected. They had this recent committee to come up with, I think it was DACA, and they had three Republicans and three Democrats. Now, the two of the Republicans were Flake and Lindsey. So they had five Democrats and one Republican on this six-man committee. Because, you know, Flake Lindsey Graham don't like Trump, and they've voted against the they voted for the DACA stuff, and they voted against
Well, I'm not really crazy about the office of the presidency since 1861, if you ask me, but that's a whole other story.
Well, I agree with you. Well, I would say 1864.
Yeah.
Lincoln wanted the there would have never been Reconstruction if Lincoln had not been assassinated. He was glad the war was over with, and if you go back, he did some bad things. There's no doubt about that.
Sure.
But he said we're back together now, and we want to keep it that way. He granted amnesty. Congress overrode his amnesty. There were only a few people that were not granted amnesty by Lincoln. I think three or four that were not granted amnesty. Everybody else that fought for the South was granted amnesty. And there's nothing in the Constitution that allows Congress to override a presidential amnesty, but they did after Lincoln died. And Johnson was not strong enough to get anything done. His vetoes were overridden over and over and over again.
Yes.
I wrote an article on the 14th Amendment, and in that article it talks about some of the overrides. When he was trying to fulfill the Lincoln legacy on, you know, we just want to get back to a whole country again. And they set up the military districts that even in the 1930s, a lot of the voting was going on based upon the military districts, even in the 1930s.
Yes, yes, yes.
70
yes,
years
and
later.
I talked about that a lot. We have... these vetoes, he said, this will make two different addresses. This will make the law itself unlawful, he said, in one veto address. And he said, this is create a de facto government in the other. We'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors, the National Intel Report.
know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back to the National Intel Report. That's John Stadtmiller's National Intel Report. I'm your guest host, because John's not feeling so good. Tom Lacombera Stewart, and I'm on with Gary Hunt. Folks, if you want to support the network, I appreciate very much if you go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on that PayPal button. You know, you keep the lights on, you keep things going, and we really appreciate it. If you'd like to support my work, you can go to paypal.me/RTRTruthMedia. We appreciate that, too. We're also going to be sharing with you Mr. Hunt's links so that you can find the rest of his stuff that are following me on Facebook and Twitter and all that. You know, I know how to do all that technological stuff. I can't stand social media these days, but I use it to spread the message and spread these links so that you guys can find them easily. So anyway, the 14th Amendment, the veto addresses. This will make the law itself unlawful, he said, Johnson said, in one veto address. And in another veto address, he said that it would create a de facto government. Boy, I think he knew what he was talking about.
One thing I found interesting about the 14th Amendment is I think I read 103 pages of Congressional Globe, and they talked about Chinese, they talked about the Africans, they talked about the Indians, but they never mentioned white people. And so you got to wonder why they didn't mention white people. did it mean that there were two classes of citizen in this country? And that was in 1867, I think, the 14th Amendment, somewhere around there. 1906, there was a Supreme Court decision called Twining versus New Jersey. And it was kind of interesting because, I guess, let me back up a little bit. There's a fellow down in Southern California named Richard McDonald, and I spent a week with him back in 1992 studying what he calls state citizenship. It's not sovereign citizen. There's a world of difference between the two. But state citizenship. And back to Twining versus state of New Jersey. It had gone to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, you got to read the beginning of the decision very carefully, but they determined that they were citizens of New Jersey, therefore they didn't have standing in the Supreme Court. And this is 40-some years after the 14th Amendment. So Twining kind of proves that state citizenship is the original class of citizenship, where the 14th Amendment citizenship is a secondary class of citizenship, which, yeah, you know, the record proves it. But so I'm a citizen of Florida residing in California, and, you know, I declare myself that way.
I don't declare myself as
a sovereign citizen, though, because that's a different story.
That's a whole psyop in and of itself. Speaking of Florida, we have a caller from Florida, but I have to get to David called in first. David in San Francisco, you're on the line with the National Intel Report.
Oh, yeah, thanks. You know, my ears perked up when I heard you talking about the Civil War, and I'm wondering if your guest is familiar with, there were two books. Otto Eisenschimmel wrote a book, I think, in the 1930s called Why Was Lincoln Murdered? And then there was a book that was put together in the late 60s, early 70s, called The Lincoln Conspiracy. And both of them go by the assumption that the Secretary of War, Stanton, was basically a traitor, and that he was playing the South against the North for the benefit of the British. The British had convinced the South to break away, and the purpose of the British was, you know, they wanted to split apart the country so they could come back and reinvade. And I'm wondering if you're familiar with that, and I'm wondering where you would take some of the theories of that.
Well, I don't know that I could say that the British caused the South to separate. I think that, you know, they separated once Lincoln was elected. I do know, and I haven't read those two books, but I've done a lot of research on the Civil War. I ran out of material in the Revolutionary War, so I shifted to the Civil War. If I find something on the Revolution, generally I go back there, and sometimes I go to World War One and World War Two as well. But I've got over 400 books in my shelf behind me, and I've read probably 90% of them. But what I found out about England was they were trying to decide which side to go on, which led to the Emancipation Proclamation. The South knew at the time that by the end of the war that they would have to, the institution of slavery was going to be over with anyway, but they were not going to give it up during the war. Had they given it up during the war, the British would have come in on their side. Lincoln did the Emancipation Proclamation, which the British realized, well, they're only freeing slaves in the rebellious states. They're not freeing slaves in the Union states.
Yeah, so, well, they had no jurisdictional authority at the time.
Right. So England rightfully said, you know, that doesn't cut it. But if the South had given up slavery, the British would have come in on the side of the South.
All right, folks, we'll be right back after a few words. Hang on the line there if you want to continue your question. We'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors on the National Intel Report.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
Welcome back. National Intel Report. I'm your host, Tom Lacovara-Stewart, in for John Statmiller, on the line with Gary Hunt. Okay. Commercials. They keep the lights on.
Let me add to what we were talking about, that when the war began, Lincoln's concern, only expressed concern, was keeping the Union together. And it wasn't until 1863 when the war of attrition, and it was a, you know, there was a lot of attrition on both sides, that he needed to find another source. And that source that he wanted to tap was the abolitionist, the young men of the abolitionist movement. And so he brought slavery in as a subject in 1863, and all of a sudden he had enormous amounts of abolitionist people volunteering to serve in the Union Army. So the shift from retaining the Union as a whole went to the slavery issue 2 years after the war began. And
yeah, a lot of people missed that point.
That gives a little credence to what you suggested, though I haven't read about England's having a role in encouraging the South to separate. That would give credence to that theory, because the Union together versus the Union split would be beneficial to England, because they've destroyed what destroyed them in 1812, in the War of 1812 or 1814, when they had to sign the treaty on the War of 1812. So,
okay, and we have. Do you have anything else you'd like to add, David?
he's bringing up part of the point that I was going to bring out, and by splitting the nation, even if they didn't physically come in and reinvade both sections, the North and the South, the North was already borrowing money from England to pay for the war, and the South was borrowing money from England to pay for the war, so he could have them both on the hook, and then, you know, England could have them both on the hook in a financial sense. But, yeah, I'd urge him to look for it's Otto Eisenschimmel. He was the author of a book called The Lincoln Conspiracy, Why Was Lincoln Murdered? It was written in 1937, and it actually claims that John Wilkes Booth was paid to kidnap Lincoln and not kill him. And there were a number of different organizations that wanted the war to drag on forever. And these were more like profiteering groups. The war profiteers, the smugglers of the North and South, were making a vast fortune in dragging the war on. There was a group called the Radical Republicans who wanted to take away the voting rights from the South and become the dominant party. If you're familiar with the Republican Party, they had just been created in 1848, and Lincoln was their first president. And they were only about 25% of the population of America at that time. And by taking away the voting rights from the South, they would be able to all of a sudden become the dominant party, since the Democrats were the major party in the South. And they knew they couldn't take away the South, take away the voting rights if the war was only about a six-month war. So Edwin Stanton was the Secretary of War, and it said that he caused supply trains to get delayed. McClellan had a chance to take Richmond within 6 weeks.
He's the other fellow that they allegedly tried to assassinate too, wasn't he?
McClellan, right? Yeah, and they tried to
he
ruin
got stabbed.
His reputation.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. He got stabbed, but somehow he managed to survive through it with a very good, solid reputation because he survived an assassination attempt. I mean, don't call me a conspiracy theorist or anything, but, you know, yeah, I'm
well,
not
Well, the real problem was a fellow in Congress named Thaddeus Lowe. He's the one see, the amnesty that Johnson wanted would have given voting rights to the South. Reconstruction took those voting rights away. And eventually happened was the voting rights were taken away from the voting white population of the South. Anybody that participated either in government or in the war lost their voting rights. And that was the majority of the white voters in the South.
Yeah. Yeah, if you check out that book, it goes into the politics of that. I believe it does mention Lowe in there. But it also talks in a third way about gold, and that since the U.S. government was borrowing money from England to pay for the war, but they also were, Lincoln realized early that the British had convinced the South to break away. He wanted to cut off that chain, and so he created the greenback dollar, which was like a treasury note, but it was based upon silver.
That's when he all but certified the evacuation of his brain from his skull, just like Kennedy.
on the contrary, what the greenback dollar would be retired when it was paid in taxes or revenue to the government. It was money borrowed without interest. And so, you know, if we had greenback dollars right now, that's real money, closer to real money than anything we've had since 1966 or something like that, silver certificates.
Well, I have another caller, David. Thank you very much. Thank you for your call. Mark in Florida. Mark, you're on with Gary Hunt.
Hey, gentlemen, I don't mind waiting at all. I don't mind at all. There's so much information going on here. I love it. And thank you for bringing on Gary behind you. I just
good
admire
man.
People that can remember things that I can't do, and I admire people that can do that. I wanted to ask, are you familiar with a gentleman named Michael Gaddy?
I'm not either.
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. Well, he can be found at rebelmadman.com, and he's a retired military, excellent historian. You should email him and get together. You guys could come up with a timeline of events for the destruction of the Several States United. Have you heard of a man named Roger Sales?
No.
Well, I'm aware of Roger Sales. Yeah.
Roger Sales wrote a book, Sovereign to Serf, and he goes through the process to inform the Secretary of State of your state citizenship. And according to the way it works, on the passport, you can choose to be a U.S. citizen or a U.S. national, and that U.S. national is disguised for state citizen. There's so much.
Okay.
So if you write that down, sovereigntosurf.com's webpage, Rebel Madman is for Michael Gaddy, and
already have
gentlemen like you, Gary, together. There's so much information here. Donald Trump has no idea where the swamp is. And George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, and John Adams.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. Remember, it was Donald Trump when he was talking about anchor babies that said, I take it from good researchers and attorneys that that the 14th Amendment doesn't support anchor babies? Well, he was right. It doesn't.
Yeah, give him time. He's got a good head on his shoulders, but he's got to take it a step at a time because remember, he can't do very much without Congress going with him. And the more he establishes with the Congress a faith in his abilities, the more he's going to be able to accomplish. Now, as far as the it's interesting that the passport, if you read it, citizen of the United States, in the next line, national. And yes, I was fully aware with that. I mentioned that I spent a week with, actually 9 days with Richard McDonald, who is probably the beginning of the understanding of state citizenship. And when I say I'm a resident of, or citizen of Florida residing in California, I declared in Florida and filed the documentation that I was a state citizen. And I consider myself that. In fact, when I filed the habeas corpus for Larry Michael Myers, it went to the Supreme Court docket, but they wouldn't hear it, and it should have gone to Scalia, which was where I directed it, but the clerks redirected it. I declared that he was a state citizen of Florida and that I was a state citizen of Florida residing in California to establish our authority, but the clerks in the Supreme Court screwed it up, and so didn't work out the way it was supposed to.
They don't want you there. They don't want you, just like an IRS case, they do not want them there. So they would have to tell the truth, so they block it.
Right.
Oh, they've been so exposed. I mean, their own employees have come out and outed them.
Well, I wrote about the habeas corpus. The district court would not hear it. They wouldn't respond to it. I prepared one for Larry to file from jail. He was in Florida at the time. And he filed it. The only way he could get it to the court was to put it in the mail and give it to the guards. And we don't know if it ever got there. So when that didn't work, then I prepared one to file on his behalf under my name as an ex-friend. And I sent it to the district court, the appellate court, and to the Florida Supreme Court. The appellate court, the district court never responded. The appellate court sent it back to me and said I have to file it with the district court, and it referred to Rule 21H in the appellate procedure. And I read 21H, and it said if the appellate court receives it, they're supposed to send it to the district court, but instead they sent it back to me. And then the Florida Supreme Court, they were a little more amiable in discussing it, but eventually they said that it's not within our jurisdiction, which, on the contrary, historically, the state has a right to question federal law, but again, that's federal money, back to Greenmail. And so then when I filed it with the Supreme Court, I said this is original jurisdiction because the appellate court and the district court would not hear it, would not respond to it. And it took me 3 months to get past the clerks, and then they screwed it up when it was in re Larry Michael Myers, which historically they're always filed in the name of the person incarcerated, regardless who filed. But it went on the docket. It was in re Gary Hunt, which, you know, they changed it. And like I say, they put it on the docket, and it was directed to, at this time, Larry was in Oklahoma in prison. And so Scalia was in designated judge for the Fifth Circuit, and so it was directed towards Scalia, but they redirected it to the docket, and the whole court decided not to hear it. They get 600 to over 1,000 cases every year, and they pick, you know, very few of them to hear. And so the habeas corpus that's guaranteed in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, I think it is, the Supreme Court, actually, all these courts suspended it, and only Congress can suspend habeas corpus. So the Constitution was out the window, and one of my articles on habeas corpus talks about the Supreme Court suspending habeas corpus when it's not within their purview. And this shows how the Constitution's been absolutely abrogated to federal overreach.
Yeah, and it, and you mentioned would you say that gentleman said a pseudo government? The 14th Amendment created called a pseudo government or
de facto government.
De facto, yeah, de facto. That's
yeah.
What they
de jure is a government by right. De facto is de jure is a government by right, which would mean obedience to the Constitution, and de facto is in fact they got the guns.
There you go. Keep it there. But look up those two gentlemen and man.
Caller.
Just thank you. Thank you for your
Mark,
study.
Mark, are you on Facebook?
Yeah, if I get my computer going again.
Okay. I'm going and tweeting out or Facebooking and tweeting out Gary Hunt's article. It's Habeas Corpus, Another Story Behind the Story. That's going out on my page right now, so you can find the link right away. So there you go.
And what's your Facebook page?
It's Thomas Lacavera Stewart.
Thank you, guys.
Or you can go to my Twitter. It's a little easier. It's at Tom Lacavera, RTR Truth Media, whichever. You'll be able to find it. But thank you for
thank
calling.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, then. Well, I was thinking that we were going to fill up this 2 hours and make it to Waco. Apparently, we didn't make it that far.
Well, we can jump down there if you want to. I mean, I did while you were gone. I think I discussed a little bit about Burns, Oregon, and the absence of federal jurisdiction where those buildings, where the alleged crimes were committed.
Oh yeah, I missed that part, but I know your position on that pretty well. So
yeah, we talked about that the other day.
Yeah, and I don't know if 15 minutes is enough to cover Waco, but you know, we could give it a shot, and you can always come back on. So
well, okay, where do we want to start?
We want to start with you. What brought you? You were there, right? You went there.
Yes, I went there on March 5th. Okay, what happened is. We all know what the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, is. There was a group together called Council of Domestic Relations, CDR, that I was a part of, and we had conference calls every week, just a couple months before Waco. And when Waco came up, I got a call from one of the members Cy Minette, I was trying to think of who he's dead now, but I ended up meeting him when I got to Waco or after Waco. But he called and he said, you know what happened in Waco today? And I said, no, what? And he said, well, the federal government And he told me about it, and he gave me the name of and the phone number of a television station that was covering it out of Dallas Fort Worth area. So I called the station and talked to somebody there, and I said, "I understand something happened in Waco. Can you tell me about it?" And he said, "We're awful busy, but I'll read you what's going out." And he started reading about a cult and a compound, and those two words just got me, you know. And I found out from Psy that they were a spinoff from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So through Psy, then I made contact with Dewey Millay. And I contacted Dewey, and he and Steve Roberts lived in a house not too far from where the, about 4 or 5 miles from where the Mount Carmel Center was. And I contacted them, and this was all occurring February 28th and 29th. And so then, I contacted CDR and said, you know, what we want to do is do an intervention. We want to get us between the BATF and the Davidians. And they said, well, we'll have 1,500 people down there. So I wrote up the plan. I got a map from Steve of where everything was. We had everything all laid out, and we got ready to do this. And five people showed up. We had one guy went out from Florida with me. Two guys from Colorado came down, and Dewey and Steve. So there were six of us, what we call the Waco team. And then five other people showed up. And those five people, then some other people showed up and talked them. Oh, you'll get killed if you do that. We figured they were government people. So it was down to the six of us, and then four of them decided that they wouldn't even go in. So it was down to two of us, and we decided this wouldn't make sense. So we abandoned the idea of the intervention. But I got there on March 5th.
Yeah, there's definitely power in numbers. We've learned that.
So I got there on March 5th, I think it was the 18th of March. I got a power of attorney from David Koresh by rather interesting means. Ken Fawcett had been monitoring the uplinks. He was a tech guy, and he was monitoring the uplinks, and he was on a radio show, and I was going to come on the radio show, but you know there were some problems with that, but I could still talk to Ken on the side. And they were talking about what was happening down there, and I got this brilliant idea. I've had powers of attorney for clients in Florida where I could represent them in public hearings, various meetings, and I had their authority to speak on their behalf. So I told Ken, ask what they had been doing is communicating by talking to the Davidians and getting them to move the antenna back and forth. So I said, ask David Koresh if he will give me power of attorney to speak on his behalf. Now, the day before this, the BATF and the FBI had told, can't remember the attorney's name now, but they told him he could represent Koresh's mother, but he couldn't represent Koresh. So when they asked David the question, as Ken described it, the antenna went back and forth very rapidly. So we took that, filled out an affidavit, went down and filed it in the public records. And then I went out to the checkpoint and said, I have a power of attorney from David Koresh. I showed them the certified document, and they said, just a minute. And in the meantime, they have BATF guys all decked out in military gear with their MP5s. And he pointed at me a couple times and then put it back against his belly. But then they said, well, you have to go over to the headquarters at the airport. And so I went over to the headquarters at the airport, and it was a runaround. They weren't going to let me in. But the next day, they said this attorney that couldn't represent Koresh could represent Koresh, Dick Degurian.
Didn't want you there.
They didn't want me there. You know, they recognized the authority, but an attorney is recognized by the court more than a power of attorney. And sure. So they recognized that it bothered them that I had this power of attorney. And so they gave Degurian the power of attorney. Now, Degurian went in, and he saw the bullet holes coming through the roof. I mean, you know, when a bullet goes through a metal or wood, it splinters on the downhill side. It's clean
sure.
on the entry side and tattered on the exit side. And he saw that they were shooting from helicopters. And when we talked to BATF, no, there were no mounted machine guns on the helicopters. Well, we didn't say mounted. They were shooting from the helicopters. Well, we can't speak to that. We don't know for sure. Well, we know for sure because the BATF agents aren't tall enough to shoot down through the roof. Now,
Linda right, that's Thompson, kind of an obvious.
Yeah. Linda, well, one guy was shot, eating French toast on his bed, and he was killed, and it had gone through a water tank, come downward through the water tank, and then struck him, too. So bullets were coming from all directions. Linda Thompson did a video called Waco, the Big Lie, and believe me, it was a big lie. Now, there was no flame-throwing tank, number one. When Mike McNulty came out with the full footage, the alleged flame fell on the floor or ground and bounced. It was a piece of material that was reflecting sunlight. But I'd taken the position that, the characteristics, you don't put a flamethrower on the side of the tank. If you do, you're going to end up cooking the guys inside. They always mount the flamethrower in the front of a tank when it's on a tank. There was no high carbonic smoke on it. And the flame-throwing tank was supposed to be throwing flames in the building 45 minutes before the fire started. The fire started, and the building was burned to the ground in 15 minutes. So nothing fit. But everybody wanted to believe there was a flame-throwing tank. Then we come to the agent outside the window, and she alleges that they were shooting inside. One of the Davidians, and I can't think of the name right now, had gone upstairs to get his rifle. He came back down and saw these other three guys in that room, and he just laid all his ammunition in that room, killing those three guys. But she alleges that the guy on the outside killed their own agents. So see this movie, and then, well, there were other things
well,
in it.
Well, I don't know. I saw them go in the window. The first one shot himself in the foot. Then the guys went in the window. And then
that was the guy on the ladder, yeah.
Right, and it appeared right after that their own guy stepped up behind him. Now, of course, this could be just the way it looked, but it looks like the guy that was on the roof laid his weapon in the window and fired, and then gunfire came through the wall. Now, I don't know who.
Well, what was coming from the Scott Sinobi was the one that did it. The ones coming out were from Scott Sinobi when he was spraying inside, killing the three agents. Now, the guy the curtains were pretty heavily mounted, so he used his rifle to look inside to see what was happening. But he didn't fire inside. Scott Sinobi killed the three agents.
Okay.
I wrote an article, it's on the blog, it's Because YouTube Said So, and it talks about this. When you have a video, it moves at its pace, and you can't stop to think unless you think to stop to think, which is what I'd like to do. And so Linda Thompson is laying out the scenario and describing this, so you're seeing this laid out, and you're believing what she says. But when I found out that Scott Sinobi did the firing, that changes the whole story. Now I know what really happened.
Oh, we can't end it there. I'm going to have you back on. We're running out of time. And there was a caller on the line. I apologize that we couldn't get to you. There just wasn't enough time in this broadcast. Gary, I have to have you back on because we just can't. 15 minutes of this just isn't enough. We got to really, there's so much more to get into. But anyway, I thank you for joining our show today. And I thank you on behalf of John Stadtmiller. And it was great to have you. I hope we can have you back soon to finish part two of this.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity of coming on.
All right. God bless you and everybody out there for the National Intel Report, Republic Broadcasting Network. God bless all of you and have a great night.
Do you worry a lot? If you're forgetful, nervous, moody, or overwhelmed, chances are you're not protecting yourself from the ravaging effects of stress and anxiety. No matter the cause, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, your quality of life, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in as little as 1 to 2 weeks and increase your ability to recall facts, names, and numbers in 4 to 12 weeks. Calm and Clever was created by scientist Kurt Hendricks, a principal investigator in 2 NIH-funded studies on Alzheimer's disease. Try Calm and Clever for 2 months. You'll feel the difference. Call 1-800-758-8746 or go to calmandclever.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.